Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of June 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vank. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. The folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility out of Logansport, Indiana, will join us to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner out of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, get an update on WOTUS and the RFS, and hear also all about what's happening in the rest of the agricultural news as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's take a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. On this Wednesday afternoon, futures in the corn pit with the July contract unchanged at the end of the day at $3.59. September, $3.65.5, up a quarter. And December corn a half cent higher at $3.76.5. The March at $3.87.25, that was up one for the day. And July of next year, a penny higher at $4.75. From the soy complex, nearby July beans were down 5.5 at the end of the day at $9.35.25. August 9.24¾, down 2¾. And September futures down 2 at $9.15¼. November contract, $9.15¼, a penny and 3/4 lower. And January futures down a penny and a quarter at $9.22½. Next year's March at $9.27¾, a quarter lower. July of next year down 3/4 at $9.36. Bean meal for the day, the settlement price at $3.0280. That was up a penny on the afternoon. And the August at $2.96.50, unchanged. Bean oil, 57 cents higher at $34.74. Soft red winter wheat for the day in the July contract down 3¼. Settlement price at $5.09¼. September there at $5.13½. Down 3¾ cents. June live cattle, 82.5 cents lower at the end of the day, 152.47½, the final trade on the afternoon. August contracted 150.72½, $1.27½ cents lower. Feeder cattle for the day, August down $1.30 at $222.02. September at $220.67½. $1.30 lower. And the lean hogs finished the June contract at $83.40, down $1.07½. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Checking out some of the rest of the numbers, crude oil for the day at $59.70 a barrel. That currently is trading down $1.56. The RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, at $2.09, a penny and a half lower on the day. And ethanol futures in the July at $1.53½, that's 0.8 cents higher. Natural gas down 5¾ at $2.64¼, and heating oil or diesel fuel is 5 cents lower at $1.89¼. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up about 99 points at this hour. It's trading at 18,100, and gold futures at $1,185.10. Down $9 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 78 degrees. On a south-southeast wind at 7 miles an hour tonight, clear, and a low of 60. Tomorrow, sunny and 83. And Thursday night, partly cloudy. A low on Thursday evening of 64 degrees. That on a south wind at 3 to 5 miles an hour. On Friday, we'll have a 40% chance of showers. Partly sunny otherwise, a high of 83. Southwest winds at 3 to 6. Those showers will continue at the 40% level into Friday night. Mostly cloudy skies and 62, and will turn partly sunny on Saturday, with a high of 81 degrees. Saturday night, cloudy and 65. Sunday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Partly sunny and 83. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the top of the rather bottom of the hour. We'll talk, of course, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Jackie Vakes joins us to take a look at the marketplace. She's from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Jackie, thanks for being with us. Let's start on the world front. When we talked this morning, as we closed out our conversation, you mentioned Greece. They're still trying to resolve problems there. What impact does it have?
Well, you know, it of course has a direct impact on the dollar, and you know, as well as an impact on the Eurozone economy. And you know, all of those things are very important to us. We saw the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development cut global growth to 3.1% today from 3.7%, and it had been basically thought to be 3.8% earlier in the year. They cut the U.S. down to 2%. For this year and 2.8% for 16, China to 6.8 this year and only 6.25 next year. You know, they basically gave the global economy a B minus. That has an impact on us because that could drive our dollar higher, especially it'll be especially interesting to see these numbers and see if Yellen and crew actually come out and raise the rates, because like we talked this morning, we know that that makes things go higher. But It's just not good, and it keeps investors very nervous is what it does. And I think the drop in the dollar, you know, June tested the 10-week average this morning. If we close below that, we'll go probably back to the 94.8 that we put in earlier in the year and test that. But, you know, the reality is we've been all the way down to 93. We're back at 95. We've been back to 97. I think you're going to just continue to see the dollar flopping around until we find out more about what's going on in the European economy, because that's what's driving things now.
You know, there is a real ebb and flow of commodities across the globe. They move from one place to the other an awful lot. For instance, much of our soybean production in the United States is exported and then imported to one country, China. And as we look there, one of the other things that's being balanced is a relationship in Asia between Japan and China, and the United States is, well, sticking its nose in the middle of that one.
It is, and you know, that's led us into problems before, and in my mind, you know, and as I'm thinking about as we move forward here and we look at, you know, maybe on this grain stocks report, again, a record number of farmer holdings, because we know farmers have moved some of the 14 corn crop, but we have seen very little movement on the bean crop. At least that's what's being reported. And so if they really get into the hair, it could definitely drop the exports, although I guess I somewhat hope that they're doing this right now, because this is the time of year that they normally would see exports to China coming out of South America rather than heavily depending on us. But we could get the repercussions, you know, there's no question. And we saw Russian intervention wheat purchase again at what would be the equivalent of $4.68 a bushel for milling wheat and $3.95 for feed wheat. You know, that's well below our cash prices. And they expect that the exports coming out of Russia on wheat are going to be 790 million bushels. So, you know, this is a concern, too, on the wheat side when you have the dollar always in the background.
A couple of other items that are in the news. One of them released earlier today, some Informa numbers. But before you get to that, OPEC meets on Friday, and they get to talk about supplies, supply side, that is, of course, of crude oil. And for corn, that makes a difference.
Well, it really does. And, you know, if you look at the crude oil market, it looks like you're bouncing on a trampoline. I mean, one day up, one day down, one day up a little higher, the next day down a little lower. And so investors are very, very concerned about this. And you know, it has far reaching implications in general for not just, you know, the corn market, but for the entire world economy outside of us, because, you know, crude oil is priced in U.S. dollars. If the dollar goes higher, it costs more for the, you know, for the people in Europe to buy, which puts more pressure on their economy. We've been very, very fortunate that we have not seen that thus far. I mean, we could be in a much different world situation if we had crude still at $100 a barrel. So what OPEC does, you know, the general thought is that OPEC is not going to do anything, that they're probably going to leave it at 30 million barrels per day. But you never know what those guys will pull out of their pockets.
Informa numbers were out earlier today. Have you seen them?
I have. It's very interesting. They did bump up the world wheat crop. Basically, the hard red crop they raised. USDA is at 416 right now for spring wheat. They're at 411. It's the numbers weren't too far off on that side of it, but I think they're right in the ballpark. They raised the Argentine corn crop by about almost 50 million bushels. They raised the world corn crop for the Ukraine by almost 100 million bushels. And so, if you look to South America right now, you know, they're beginning the Safrina corn harvest in Brazil, and it's about 1% done. Well, they were at 79 bushels 2 months ago, then they went to 92 bushels, and now they're at an estimate of 101.6 bushels to the acre. I mean, that'll be a record for them if that does actually happen. But, you know, you can see that trend. You can hear where I'm going with this. You know, it's a situation where we continue to see the world crops getting larger. It's going to take something really major to bring price to a higher level. But just like in the U.S., the farmers are slow sellers. They're not selling their corn. They're not selling their beans. They're all hoping for a higher price or a higher dollar. End users are buying hand to mouth, which is what we're seeing here. We're seeing quite a bit of that. And, you know, they haven't really even purchased very many inputs for this coming year because, number one, the low prices as far as commodities go and all the different government issues that they have going on. So, you know, that it's going to be interesting to see how it moves. Argentina's almost done with beans, 90%. They're 39% done with their corn. And Brazil is starting the new soybean free period right now. It goes from June 1st to September 15th, where they get fined if there is even a soybean plant found in a ditch or anywhere else. And so it's just a circumstance where with the El Nino in the background, Todd, from a weather standpoint, that would imply that North America and South America both will have what you would call a rather temperate summer again. And if that's the case, that gives crops a real opportunity, if you can get them in the ground, you know, to be able to go and actually produce. So we'll see.
Yesterday, the market popped really pretty good. Some are hopeful that that is more than just a short covering rally, but maybe you can explain what it might really be and what short covering is and why that would pop the marketplace and what fundamentals might help support a higher move in the commodities in general.
Right. Well, when you look at the when they talk about short covering, Todd, what that is if you are the seller of a contract, and in order to do that, someone else has to buy the contract, right? But if you are a seller of a contract and you buy it back, it brings the market higher. And that's what we've seen the funds doing. We've seen the funds reducing their short positions in corn, beans, and wheat. And so this rally is basically built on short covering, and that is never a solid rally. What you want to see is on days when you do have an up market, big increases in the open interest. In other words, a lot more buying interest. And we just haven't seen that. And the big change is years ago, you know, you could look at one or two days of an increase in open interest on a buying binge, let's say, and feel pretty confident that we were going to go a lot higher. Now it takes almost a week before you can actually do it. And if you look at the open interest numbers, there's just nothing good there from the standpoint of one day you'll have a big up on a day when you're down on the market, and the next day you'll have a big up on a day when you're up on the market. And so, you know, we have so many other things that are in this marketplace that weren't there before, primarily, you know, black box buying, things like that, that are much more structured in the way that they do things. And so I think when you look at when you look going forward from here, we have a USDA report next week on the 10th. That will be somewhat of a director, but it'll be much like the March report from the standpoint that people are going to be waiting more for the acreage and grain stocks report. And I just believe that grain stocks report is the most important report we'll be looking at the end of the month, even though all the emphasis is on acreage. What it will tell us is what the farmer is holding, you know, and we've had the funds being you know, pretty negative, the marketplace. Well, as soon as the dollar falls back, they come in and cover some of their shorts, just in case the dollar is going to continue to fall back. The minute the dollar goes higher, you see them sell the market. And so it's all a function of how it operates. But at the end of the month, if we see farmers holding on to a very large portion of the corn crop and the bean crop, that's not going to be pretty, you know, because it implies, now I'm hearing, like you said this morning, you know, 25% of that crop might roll forward, right? You know, they just might hang on to it and roll it out for, and fine, if you're going to do that, that's great. But, you know, normally we see a large portion of the crop that's rolled forward anyway. We still usually have to have it gone sometime prior to harvest. So the implications to the trade would be that we could see a glut of old crop corn come in the closer we get to the harvest time and the cleaning of bins. And so that we're just going to be looking at, I'm going to be looking at that grain stock just because that'll be big. And then if acreage would come in much lower, they may offset each other. You know, we might not get as big a kick, but I still think we could see December corn go down to that 2010 low of 343 at some point in time before we find a lot of buyer interest. Because, you know, the end users are getting less and less interested in buying with the idea that, you know, each time we have a rally in this market, we seem to fail. And so they're becoming more hand-to-mouth buyers again like they used to be.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us, Jackie. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vanks, of course, is with Stuart Peterson, joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Topping the agricultural news, the National Biodiesel Board says the EPA's proposed numbers for biodiesel use in the renewable fuel standard is a step in the right direction. NBB Vice President of Federal Affairs Ann Steckel says the proposed numbers for biodiesel give the industry some room to grow.
The EPA proposed for the biomass-based diesel bucket within the RFS actual production at 2014 volumes, which was 1.63 billion gallons, escalating in 2015 to 1.7, 1.8 in 2016, and then 1.9 in 2017.
Steckel says biodiesel also qualifies as an advanced biofuel.
You put them together, it really gives us a range that we can shoot for production within the biodiesel industry. So if you put them both together for 2015, we're looking at a range of production from 1.7 billion gallons to 1.87 billion gallons. And then in 2016, the number is 1.8 billion gallons to 2.19 billion gallons. So obviously, again, those numbers really need to go up because we have a lot of capacity here in the United States and facilities that want to produce biodiesel. We just need to get a higher number to be able to produce that.
Steckel says the other largest contributor to the advanced biofuel category is sugarcane ethanol. The ethanol industry is upset, of course, with the EPA reductions for ethanol blends within the RFS and is already rallying troops to attend a June 25th meeting to take place in Kansas City. Of course, the RFS is just a proposal and comments are being taken until the 27th day of July. It's one of U.S. EPA's actions taken last week. It also released WOTUS, or the Waters of the U.S. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says a spending bill is now the best target for repeal of EPA's Waters of the U.S. rule, and it is not a proposal, but rather a rule, since it's harder for the president to veto an appropriations measure. But Grassley asked appropriators to bear down on EPA even more directly.
EPA ought to be sorted out and passed separately with this rider on it. So if the president vetoes it, he'd be shutting down all EPA. And who would really care if EPA was shut down?
There are not many on Grassley's side on WOTUS, but he adds more realistically.
Obviously, we have to have an EPA. So I'm being somewhat facetious when I said that. But it would make the president think twice before vetoing a bill just because of something as atrocious as Waters of the U.S.
Another complication in targeting WOTUS via a spending bill is that Democrats want a budget redo to undo earlier automatic cuts before doing appropriation spells.
But if you've got a few Republicans saying that, and all the Democrats are going to be of that view, it's very well that you would have what your question implies. But I hope not. But I say it's a real possibility.
Senate bills are already moving to repeal WOTUS, but freestanding bills are much more likely to deter vetoes. even when they can pass. And finally today, the American Farm Bureau Federation is urging the House to pass TPA for the future of agriculture. AFBF President Bob Stallman says the U.S. leads the world in ag exports, but will soon give up customers and potential markets without the Trade Promotion Authority needed to secure important new trade agreements. Last year, U.S. agriculture exports surpassed $152 billion. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention now to what's been happening in the agricultural cash grain market. On the phone line with us today from the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, is Alex Reed. Thanks for being with us, Alex. Tell me about the past couple of days, the pop in the marketplace, and whether farmers in your area reacted.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd. So past couple of days, definitely seen the market head up significantly, especially beans and wheat. Corn following suit. There's been a lot of fund movement happening in Chicago. A lot of stuff moving around. Some concerns on crop conditions out west with some storms rolling in. But it has stirred a little bit of selling here. Basis has stayed strong, especially at the ethanol plant, and farmers certainly took advantage of it the past few days.
Okay, so compare the movements in Chicago with the basis movements, who say they've stayed strong, but have they kept pace?
At first, basis was well above the cash prices in Chicago. And it's kind of, I mean, we've stayed, each week we've tended to increase basis, but this week we've kind of stayed put just because with the jump in futures, you know, guys, if they're cash, you know, cash focused, you know, basis has been staying pretty steady, even when the futures go up. But if futures turn back down, then basis will have to jump back up to get more corn moving.
So your expectation would be that you'll see a stronger basis even in the next several days if the market were to turn lower then.
Absolutely. And just seeing the way that things played out today, where we were much higher for a lot of the day, and then we closed actually. Corn closed even, and beans and wheat were down a little bit. And if we turn back down tomorrow, basis could definitely, you know, firm up here in the nearby.
And so you're on the hunt for corn, obviously. Are producers willing to just wait it out through new crop, or are they going to have to dump and clean out bins, do you suppose?
It all depends. You know, we're reading that a lot of guys are more interested in holding the crop as long as possible because the price is just so cheap. But I think that come July, if the crop in the field looks good, they're going to have to move it, and in which case, you know, it will be cheap, but basis will fade then if producers get out and start moving everything that they're storing.
It's that game of chicken. It sounds fun to begin with, but eventually somebody has to move, don't they?
Eventually they do, that's for sure.
Soybeans, how's basis holding up there?
Basis at the processors staying very strong here nearby, you know, paying good overs to get some beans moving just because beans are still short, especially here in the area, so they're paying good premiums.
Just your spot month bids, please, please.
Mm-hmm. Yep. June, $3.64 for corn, beans, $9.44.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Alex Reed. He is with the Andersons out of their Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report and everything in between. willag.org.
It's National Chocolate Macaroon Day. Like many foods, the origins of the macaroon are murky, but some historians trace it back to an Italian monastery. The pastry became popular in France in the 18th century. It's also St. Morad's Day, patron of wine growers and winemakers. He founded the Monastery of St. Christopher and is said to have lived the whole of each Lent on a single bunch of grapes. On this day in agricultural history, in 1539, Hernando de Soto claimed Florida for Spain. He landed 9 ships, 620 men, and 220 horses at Charlotte Harbor, Florida. In 1841, Nicholas Francis Aperit died. He was inventor of the canning process, preserving food by sealing it in sterilized containers. He published the results of 14 years of research in 1810 and received a 12,000 franc award from French government officials for his efforts. And in 1844, Wilbur Atwater was born. An American scientist, Atwater developed agricultural chemistry. He received a Ph.D. from Yale in 1869 for his studies on the chemical composition of corn, and he established the first agricultural experimental station in the U.S. in 1875. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This is Illinois Public Media. Drew Lerner is with us to discuss the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and we might even take a look around the planet at some other growing regions in the Northern Hemisphere. Thanks, Drew, for being with us. Start with conditions in the Midwest. Has it been a good, normal kind of run for the beginning of the growing season?
Not really. I guess we have to define what normal is, right? But from what I've heard, there's some great crops out there in some locations. There's quite a few corn fields, though, that were negatively impacted by all the cool shots of air that we got around during the last few weeks. And a little bit of dryness that occurred in the eastern Midwest and has some of those crops areas in Indiana and Ohio a little bit off. But there's some beautiful fields out there in some areas in the western Corn Belt, and now we're, of course, dealing with some excessive rains potentially here for areas across Nebraska, eastern Nebraska, western Iowa, northwestern Missouri over the next few days. So may see some problems evolve from that. There's still some soybeans that need to be put in the ground out there. So having a lot of heavy rain in that particular area for a little while here is pushing the end of the planting season a little bit, and there may be some fields that don't get planted the way we're going.
It's been a persistent wet sort of spring in some areas, especially after the very first month, that April. May was relatively wet, seems to have been pretty wet here in my part of the world. How concerned do we need to get about so much moisture, for instance, in Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, although Minnesota, they were in really early to begin with.
That's right, and I think we do have to be a little bit concerned about it, just simply because it looks like as we go through these next few weeks, the jet stream should be in a little bit more of a northerly position, which will actually perpetuate some of the wetter biases in some of those areas. So we may end up with a little bit of surplus moisture, some standing water, a little bit of local flooding maybe periodically. I don't know that it's a huge event to be concerned with, but this isn't necessarily going to be an unusually warm or hot summer. I think we're going to have temperatures that are a little bit closer to normal, so adding all that moisture out there could promote a little bit of wet weather disease issues and things like that. But for the most part, I do think that it'll be a mostly good production year. I was at a conference earlier this week, and one of the subject matters was just, do you think that there was a potential for a record corn crop or record soybeans? And the general belief was that we'll have a good year, but it's not necessarily a record. And I think that's probably a good statement to make.
I'm going to take you back to 1993 just because I want to check. That year snuck up on people when it got really wet because we did get planted. It wasn't until June, July that they figured out, wait a second, this is a record year. Of course, that was record floods across the Mississippi. This doesn't stack up that way yet, I know.
No. The flow pattern is different from that of those years. We were in a southwest flow pattern, certainly back then, but it was a more pronounced pattern that was unlikely to change for a while. This is a pattern that will change.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.